Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Thursday, the 6th of February. Coming up today, we'll hear from the leaders of Kent and Medway councils following the news they'll miss out on the first phase of devolution plans. We'll also hear from a wellbeing consultant about some of the pressures young people are facing as we mark Time to Talk Day. But first, taking a look at our top story today. Jail sentences have been handed out to members of an organised crime group from Kent who pocketed £20 million in unpaid taxes. Police have described it as a complex investigation into construction industry fraud. Lucy joins me on the podcast with more details on the case. So, Lucy, how was the fraud uncovered?
Well, it all came to light when one of the group was arrested and investigated for firearms theft and money laundering offences in April 2020. Police managed to establish she was a criminal accountant and the rest of the operation was then discovered. The gang had set up a series of labour supply companies, keeping VAT payments from customers companies that should have gone to HMRC for themselves. They also withheld financial deductions from subcontractors' agreements that should have been given to HMRC under the construction industry scheme, essentially cheating the tax office out of an estimated £22 million.
And what sentences have been handed out to the offenders?
Well, it was a range of different jail terms for the six men involved in the fraud. The longest was 9 years and 4 months. A woman was also given a suspended sentence for money laundering. In total, the amount of time the group will spend behind bars adds up to 34 years.
What have police said about the outcome of the case?
Detective Constable Damien Shaw was the one leading the investigation. He's told us the group are now paying the price for their actions. He went on to say tax fraud is not a victimless crime. The public rely on the revenue generated by tax to fund essential services. HMRC have also issued a statement saying the tenacity and expertise of the investigators has protected millions of pounds of taxpayers' money. They're encouraging anyone with information about any type of tax fraud to report it online.
Thanks, Lucy.
Kent Online News.
The mum of a Folkestone teenager who died after taking ecstasy says she's concerned about a drug epidemic in the town. 16-year-old Ben Davies suffered an overdose at his home in June last year. Figures show 23 people in Folkestone and Hythe died from drug poisoning in 2023, which is higher than any other part of Kent. We've been given this statement from Kent Police.
The force regularly visits schools to educate pupils on the dangers of drugs. We also work with teachers to help identify cases where early interventions might be needed. The misuse of drugs can cause misery to people's lives, and we are committed to reducing the harm caused by illegal substances such as heroin and cocaine. We have not only dedicated teams of officers tackling the issue of county lines and gangs, but our enforcement approach through the work of our community safety units and local beat officers, combined with education and support services for users, is helping to reduce the damage that misuse of these substances can cause in communities.
A Kent mum who's thought to have drowned after getting trapped in rocks on a seafront has been described as beautiful and the best. Saffron Cole Nottage tripped and fell between large boulders in Lowestoft at the weekend. Tributes left in memory of the 32-year-old say she'll be missed by so many. A police officer's been bitten by an XL bully during a series of drugs raids in East Kent. We're told the PC wasn't injured and the pet was legally registered. Properties in Dover, Deal, Thanet and Aylsham were searched as part of the operation. Detective Inspector Eleanor Miller is from Kent Police.
We were tackling an organised crime group that we suspected to be dealing Class A drugs in the east of the county. Kent Police made 7 arrests of individuals and we've seized quantities of Class A drugs that we believe at this time to be heroin, crack cocaine, cannabis and ecstasy tablets, as well as weapons including a zombie knife. We see large quantities of cash and a significant amount of digital devices, which we believe the organised crime group members use to communicate conduct their business. This is a development of work over the last 4 months, building up intelligence and information on a particular organised crime group that are significant in the selling of Class A drugs in the east of the county. The arrest today and the seizures would have made a significant impact on this, the activities and the abilities for this organised crime group to operate. But one of the addresses that warrants executed at this morning, a dog which was confirmed to be an XL bully, did bite an officer. The officer is not injured And the dog remains with its owner. It hasn't been seized. It is a licensed and registered pet.
Kent Online News.
A Walden man's been locked up after being found to have thousands of illegal images. Richard Faulkner was already under a court order, which meant he couldn't use devices unless they'd been installed with web monitoring software. The 70-year-old from the High Street was detained last summer and a computer seized. He's been jailed for 3 years. A teenager's been taken to hospital with head injuries after being attacked at a bus station in Canterbury. Two women were also reportedly assaulted when it happened at the end of December. Four boys aged 16 and 17 and a 33-year-old man have been questioned by police. Council bosses say they're angry and disappointed after Kent missed out on the first wave of devolution changes. The government's chosen other areas to lead the shake-up. Changes would have seen all 14 local authorities scrapped in favour of fewer unitary ones. Medway Council leader Vince Maple has been reacting to the news.
As you'll be aware, we put in a request to be in the priority programme for devolution for our region of Medway and Kent. The government have today informed us that we've been unsuccessful in that request. That is deeply disappointing for our region, and we're going to seek further clarification as to the reasons why that decision was made and, importantly, what the next steps will be. The white paper on local government and English devolution talks about every part of England having both a mayor and also single-tier authorities like Medway in the future. So, of course, this is not the end of this conversation. This is a milestone, and we'll continue to work hard to deliver the very best, both now as Medway Council and into the future. I want to take this opportunity to thank all those staff who've worked hard on our application and indeed residents who've been in touch to share their views. I would encourage you to keep doing that as we move forward.
Kent County Council leader Roger Goff has also been giving us his reaction.
I am disappointed, angry, and baffled in pretty much equal measure, because this is a decision that I think is very hard indeed to understand. We have worked on this for what we believe deeply, and I think it's true of both authorities, Kent and Medway, under different political parties, leaders and councils working together, working also with 12 districts and boroughs across Kent. We had put forward a very strong case. We think that the case for Kent, historic Kent, so including both the Kent County Council area and the Medway Council area, it's a historic unit. It makes sense geographically. It brings together all the major public services. It does just about everything that you would want for a devolution area. And we have worked extremely hard to put this case to government because we believed it was profoundly in interests of the 1.9 million residents of this area. We do not have a clear picture as to why this has been turned down, and the more so when it's been turned down at a time that all other areas in the immediate environment have been accepted. That is something that we are going to be following up to seek to really understand what lies behind this decision.
The decision means local elections are likely to go ahead in May. Stuart Jeffrey, who's leader of Maidstone Council, is pleased devolution plans are being delayed.
We think this is a really good day for democracy. We were really concerned that people were going to be making decisions over the long-term future for Kent, and people whose term of office would have effectively expired, and therefore they would have had no democratic mandate to do so. Now we have a chance to have a new cabinet, take control of Kent County Council and make sure that the plans are right for the people of Kent. The concept of devolution is absolutely the right thing. Bringing power and money as close to people as possible is exactly what we should be having. The way it's being gone about really worries me. The powers are not enough, and the accountabilities clearly need to be worked through. But that can all be done. That's work we can do.
Kent Online News.
The Kent Online podcast has been told building work on land in Kent owned by Prince William could get underway as soon as next year. The Duchy of Cornwall, which is headed up by the future king, is looking to develop a 2,500 home estate near Faversham. The aim is to make it a carbon net zero neighbourhood with residents encouraged to walk and grow their own food. Ben Murphy is the estate's director.
At the moment, in terms of this master plan, it's a landscape-led master plan. It will deliver around 2,500 homes. About 875 of those will be affordable homes. That's around 35 to 40%. And 437 will be social rent, which is the most affordable form of what is otherwise called affordable housing. And an emphasis on 2 and 3 bed homes, because that's what local people need. alongside a priority for key worker housing, and we'll be looking at private rented and other options as well. We'll also be delivering a primary school. We're looking at a net zero carbon development and a on-site water wastewater treatment plant as well, because we know that's really important with all the stresses on the water systems locally. And other aspects, about 50% of the site will remain green, about 20% biodiversity net gain. And we'll be making investments in transport links, creating jobs and space for local businesses. So opportunities for local people as well as homes. And finally, we're very much sort of wedded to the, well, people have told us they'd like to see more Faversham in the sense of the local vernacular and architecture of Faversham. And actually, this is finally, really, we're looking at new medical facilities, but we do need a stronger steer from the NHS in terms of exactly what they need. But that's also responding to local people's concerns around waiting times at surgeries, that kind of thing.
Yeah, infrastructure seems to be a really key thing, doesn't it, in getting that right when you're wanting to develop this many houses. You also mentioned there carbon net zero. It seems to be a key phrase at the moment. What does that mean, and what will that mean for the development as a whole?
The duchy, through our former and current duke, in terms of now King Charles and Prince William, are both committed to ensure that we, the duchy, are net zero first and foremost, in terms of, we have been in our operations since around 2005. But on new development, we've also pioneered various solutions in this regard, from solar slates, and it means two things really, I'd say. Is the operation of the home, so relying on renewable energy and reducing the cost of energy, taking a fabric first approach by basically reducing the heat and energy load needs of that house, so to reduce people's actual occupational costs and energy bills, I think is really important. That's where a lot of focus is. But actually, what the duchy's been trying to pioneer and has been pioneering is also the use of local materials, because 50% of the carbon in a home is actually in its construction, and not a lot of people and policy at the moment is not addressing that. I think for us, it goes much beyond just renewable energy to power homes. It's actually how we construct the development, but it's also about allowing people to live more sustainable lifestyles. So having that walkable community, reducing car dependency, which is really important for people on lower incomes, allowing people to grow fruit and veg locally through allotments and orchards, and how we also ingrain that biodiversity net gain within the development and create a nature-rich estate.
Obviously, when we talk about big developments like this, there are concerns from people who already live in the area, and they probably want to share those with you. You've got a load of pop-up sessions taking place. What are you hoping to hear from local people, and how much of what they say to you will actually go into perhaps amending those plans? Will you change them if they all start to say some really significant or interesting things to you?
We're always open to suggestions and adaptations, and this is a 20-year master plan delivery proposal we're putting forward. We have been listening, and we hope that's partly what will be at the centre of this engagement, is also playing back to people what they've asked for, what they feel their town needs. Because what we're doing is, we're sort of six years into that consultation with the people of Faversham and surrounding areas. What we've got now is a lot more detail on those plans. So that's what's changed since previous consultations. We're saying, you've spoken, we've listened, we have more detail to share with you now. And we're really looking forward to hearing from as many people as possible. I think we've flyed around 14,000 people. So that's around Faversham local villages. So we're just hopeful that as many people turn up as possible. And and we're here to listen, so we look forward to meeting as many of you as we can.
Events are taking place from tomorrow to share thoughts on the plans.
Kent Online News.
Sad news from a wild animal park in Kent now after the death of one of their leopards. Cyan was 18 and arrived at Howlett's near Canterbury from a zoo in France. He leaves behind a 14-year-old son. Davina McCall has revealed she felt angry after being diagnosed with a brain tumour last year. The presenter, who lives in Tunbridge Wells, has spoken on her Begin Again podcast, saying she felt her health issues had taken control of her life. She had surgery to remove a colloid cyst and had to spend time in intensive care. A well-being consultant from Ashford has been telling the podcast about some of the pressures on young people as we mark Time to Talk Day. The event is part of Children's Mental Health Week and aims to encourage youngsters to speak about how they're feeling. Steph Unthank from Infinity Wellness says it can be hard to open up about your struggles.
There's something that always comes up for me around days or theme weeks that actually focus on specific human challenges, I guess. And they're really important because they do raise awareness and they do get people talking, which is the start, right? But I think we do need to remember it's a day or 1 week in time, a lot of the time. And of course, raising awareness, and we're in the UK, but raising awareness across the UK of a broad topic, and particularly now we're looking at mental health and mental health provisions in the UK. It's important that we try to keep that going, you know, modern challenges and the issues around mental health continue to be here. They're never just here for 1 week or 1 day. They continue to be here. And I think it's really important to remember that statistics, unfortunately, are tracking in the wrong direction. You know, so in 2017, you know, one in nine children were being diagnosed with a mental health condition. And 2021, 2022, that's gone up to one in five. So that's why I think it's really important, A, to have the theme days and the theme weeks, because they really do raise awareness and get people talking about it. But it's what we do after. How do we keep going? How do we keep that momentum going?
What kind of struggles are young people facing at the moment? Is it maybe different to struggles in the past that children are struggling with now? And what kind of stuff do you see them sort of coming to you for help with?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I don't think it's uncommon to hear older generations, and I include myself in that, to hear us saying things like, we didn't have those problems in our day. And I think there's truth. There's real truth in that. And I think that if you speak to any parent or guardian or carer or even an older sibling, auntie, uncle, they will talk, I think, very clearly and honestly about the challenges for young people, particularly in this kind of modern culture that we're in now. And I think some of that is around distraction. There's a huge amount of distraction everywhere, whether it's social media or whether it's the press, whether it's the micro level stuff that we might get ourselves involved in our day-to-day lives, that could be at home or at school or out in a social environment, or even the macro level stuff, right? So we can't assume that just because it's a child or a young person, they don't hear. They certainly hear. And the distraction and the I guess the just the overwhelming amount of information that is out there in the public domain can be really challenging for a young mind to absorb. And so I think that's one thing. But then I think there's other things like competition. You know, it's a really competitive world that we live in, isn't it? And I think young people and children are so much more familiar now with what it is that they believe, and it's perception, what it is that I believe that I need to do to be the best that I can be. You know, so whether it's sports or performance or a hobby or an interest or school or just being a great friend, the competition element of life is fiercer, I think, than it's ever been. And then I think we've got image, and you know, social media plays a huge part in that, doesn't it? And we know that image, when we look at some of the research, the way that children see themselves and image starts to kick in at around 4 years old. You know that? 4 years old. And that's because what we're seeing is that children are starting to have an identity from about three onwards. And we're noticing small moments there where, for instance, I'm not wearing that. I want to wear this instead. Or I don't want my hair like that. I want my hair like this instead. And that's a 3-year-old that's making those choices. So image is a really big part of some of the pressures that children are under too. And then the final thing I would say is, as I said before, it's modern world culture. How do we keep up the pace? How do we keep up the pace, but you know, kind of stay ahead of the game. And that influences young people as much as it does adults. And I'm sure that everything that I've said there, adults can really resonate with as well. And when we get into our teenage years and into young adulthood. And then finally, the bombardment of information. And I kind of touched on this earlier. But it's everywhere, every single touch point. We are absolutely bombarded with information, and it's so overwhelming that what that can sometimes cause is those triggers of stress and anxiety and fear and dread.
Steph is also concerned about the loss of youth groups and the impact that's having on young people's well-being. She's co-written a series of children's books called Mindful Bee to help youngsters find ways to express themselves.
Kent Online News.
A pub near Maidstone's being given a revamp after being taken over by new owners. The Bull Inn at East Farley closed in 2022 over animal welfare concerns. It's now reopened and will soon be getting an upgraded patio area and brand new cocktail bar. Bosses in Maidstone have announced plans for the first ever big day out. The one-day festival is going to take place on June 14 and is about getting us enjoying parks and open spaces. And Haribo have revealed the opening date for their second store in Kent. It'll launch at Bluewater next Wednesday. The other shop is at Ashford's Designer Outlet. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Blue Sky. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via The Briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Kate Faulkner, all one word, at the checkout, you'll get £30 off the price of an annual subscription.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.